Welcome to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Marcellus Wiley here, Emmanuel Acho.
What's up, my brother?
Air bowls, brother.
Let's get it.
Look like you went to Ross and got a nice one out of them. All right, coming up, we'll tell you what we think of Patrick Mahomes' new 10-year deal. We're going to get started today with Cam Newton, who arrived in New England this weekend to take a physical and finalize his contract with the Patriots. But if you thought landing a new job would stop Cam from posting Instagram videos, think again. He dropped one yesterday with a special message to anyone who doubted Cam.
You don't choose that over this. I'm really a model. I'm gonna say this. I'm getting tired of being humble now, but it's one joke. When he raw, everything stops.
All right, Acho, man. You like Cam clapping back at his critics here?
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I saw this video and I was instantly taken back, Marcellus, to my childhood. Right. And you'll be able to resonate with this and what I'm about to tell you because I know you got kids. Remember Marcellus the Lion King. Okay. Remember when Rafiki, marches Simba down to the water?
Yeah.
And Simba looks into the water and Simba's like, it's just me. It's just me. I'm not strong enough. And then he says, no, check again. And he sees Mufasa. And what does Mufasa say? Mm. He says, remember who you are.
Remember. I watch it every day still. I got a four-year-old.
He says, remember who you are. That's all Cam Newton did. Yeah. Cam Newton clearly over the weekend, he looked into the mirror and he remembered who he was. Mm. He remembered, like, wait a second. I am Cam Newton. I'm Superman. Mm-mm. Don't you dare speak of me in the same breath as Jared Stidham. No disrespect to Jared Stidham.
Oh, really? That's how you're going to end it?
Don't you dare speak of me in the same breath as Teddy Bridgewater, who replaced me. No disrespect to Teddy B.
I heard
But
you.
What Cam is saying is, I remember who I am. And everybody else needs to remember, too. That's why he can say, y'all gonna choose that over this?
Ooh.
Like, come on now.
Remember.
Talk about it, Mufasa.
I didn't think I was gonna have to start off the week with a disagreement, but we gotta go here.
Here we are.
You're in love with this. I'm in like with this.
Okay.
Yeah, remember somebody say, I'm in like with you. You're like, it's gonna end. I don't like this, and there's a part that I understand that I do love, and it's the fact that I'm so blessed and so glad I didn't play in the NFL when they had workout videos.
Okay.
Yo, first of all, you put on my song and I got to go out there and imagine how I want to perform and I start grinding in that weight room. Please don't judge me right now. I'm in an insane place because there's going to be an insane task asked of me. I got to go out there and hit a guy 60 to 80 times that's bigger than me against his will, and he's going to punch back. So when you pushing that weight, it's okay to go to absurd places. But then you got to calm down, Cam. You got to come to reality.
Oh, why?
Let me tell you why.
Please, please.
Because of where it lands. Intentions are one thing, but the effect is greater. It looks like a slight at Jarrett Stidham. It looks like Cam is listening to the fan base and saying, y'all comparing me to a dude who only threw four passes in the NFL? Mm-hmm. Who in the hell are y'all? Where does that land? That lands in the locker room where Jarrett Stidham's sitting there like, oh, Cam got a little issue with me. It's not just a friendly competition where he wants to enhance his teammates and make the best man win. He looking at me like I'm a crumb. He looking at me like I don't even compare. And that's not something that you should put out in a locker room, on a team, in that atmosphere when you're just trying to go out there and compete.
I think the point of Cam's video is to address what you just said.
Mm.
Jarrett Stidham saying, he's looking at me like I'm a crumb. He's looking at me like this isn't a friendly competition. Right. To Cam Newton, there is no competition, sir.
Okay.
To Cam Newton, he is looking at Jarrett Stidham like, you might not be a crumb, but you're going to be the last piece of the loaf. Mm. You know that last piece that you look at
with
like,
the fat piece of the bread?
Yeah, that last piece. Don't nobody want that last piece of the loaf now.
Right.
So he might not be a crumb necessarily, but to Cameron Newton, it is no competition. I mean, even think, bro, as much as people were praising Teddy Bridgewater, went undefeated in his five starts last year, 5-0, did great for the Saints, marvelous comeback story, marvelous human being.
Yeah.
Cam Newton is still like, I'm an MVP. Like, even physically, mentally, I've done stuff these kids can't even dream of doing. Like, my worst plays are still better than some of their best.
Okay.
And so I think Cam Newton is like, hey, bruh, no shade.
Oh, no shade.
No shade.
Oh, that clears it all
no
up.
Shade.
No shade. But
it
shade.
Is no competition.
No shade, but there's shade. But you know what I said? No shade, so don't take the
it's
shade.
It's a little something.
Okay. Doing this show with you is interesting, the dynamic. I was 16 years old when you first said, I was 16. Like, literally, NWA came out and broke up, and you still weren't born. Amazing to me. I got some things that maybe, I don't even want to say teach you, but just lend you.
Please, lend.
In terms of my experience.
Lend.
There's going to be a headline.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give it week three, week four. Bills, boys are bickering. And there's going to be a snapshot. And it's going to be Cam Newton not even mad at Jared Stidham. It's going to be Cam Newton trying to figure out what the last play call was, and he didn't like it and disagreed. And it's going to be Jared Stidham sitting on the sideline trying to look at him and say, what are you saying, Cam Newton? And they're going to have that headline and that snapshot. You know what that's going to fill that article up? What the content's going to come from? This moment right here. We already have the content for a situation of a feud, a bickering. And it may not even come to that. But that's what they did to Kobe with Shaq. That's what they did with Kobe and Dwight Howard. This is how you give them the emotional content they need for those moments. And let's talk about that. Emotional content.
Mm-hmm.
You're lifting weights and you ain't thinking about all of the shrapnel that you're throwing out there at Jared Stidham and others. Here's the problem. Emotional intelligence doesn't communicate well with cognitive intelligence.
That's facts.
So when you're feeling That's something, facts. You're not really thinking. When a girl is like, oh, saying stuff to you and you feeling her, you ain't even thinking about what she's saying. You're just mm-hmm. feeling it, right? When you get into that mindless place in a football game where you're not even thinking about the plays and thinking about your assignment, you're just feeling your way, you're not communicating with both sides of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
He was feeling himself in this moment.
Which he should be.
I agree. But was he thinking in that same moment? That's my issue. Let's talk about another quarterback who may be trying to send a message. Russell Wilson, who surprised a lot of people last week by popping up in a workout with Antonio Brown. Seattle's one of the teams reportedly interested in signing AB, and Wilson has been talking a lot this offseason about wanting more weapons and running a more pass-oriented offense. So, Acho, you think Russ is trying to send Seattle a message here? Message?
Absolutely, Russ is trying to send Seattle a message, and it's clear why. You don't associate yourself, Marcellus, with one of, if not the most vilified player in the NFL right now, if you don't have ulterior motives. Russ has nothing to gain from working out with AB. Let's keep it real.
Ooh.
It's not like Russ can't find another receiver to throw to.
Sure.
It's not like there aren't a plethora of NFL dudes that's like, hey, Russ, yeah, yeah, I'll come out. We can do this real 7-on-7, one-on-ones, et cetera.
Right.
So for Russ, not only to work out with AB, but to post it. Because it's one thing to do it in private.
Right,
you know what
right,
I'm saying? Everybody
right.
know that. Like, a lot of stuff, you know, you can get it done in private.
Right.
But when you come out with it publicly, you want the world to know.
Mm.
And Russ would only want the world to know that he is not only associated with AB, but positively associated with AB if he's trying to tell Pete Carroll, hey, bruh, he's good people. If he's trying to tell John Snyder, the GM, hey, bruh, he's good people. He's good by me. And if he's good by me and I'm the quarterback, he should be good by you as well.
Yeah, yeah. Look, like you said, ulterior motives. Yes, he is sending a message here. Don't think he got the right address because he's been sending messages this entire
delivered.
It's not getting delivered. Excuse me, management. I would love for you guys to re-sign Jadeveon Clowney. He creates havoc for our defense. It helps us out offensively. Jadeveon Clowney on the roster? Pete Carroll, everybody. I'd love to run an up-tempo offense like the Kansas City Chiefs. Have they run an up-tempo offense yet? I would love for our offense to even be more pass-oriented. Stop running the damn student body left from USC days. Have they changed their formula yet? He wants AB signed. Oops, we're not going to do those type of things. The list continues. Can I get another wide receiver weapon? If it's not going to be AB, can we get another dog up in here? Nope. Six tight ends on this roster right now. The tight end room is deep.
It's deep.
It's deep, but that's not how you effectively play the game if you're going to do it to optimal standards. Russell Wilson knows this. You're going to waste my prime. Like, look, I am a tremendous quarterback going into my ninth year. Let's look at his pass offenses his first 8 years. You want to hear these numbers?
Please.
27, Frank. 27.
Ugh.
26.
Ugh.
20th. And then he got a couple of 14s. He's only been in the top 10 in terms of pass offense once.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at number 10. So he's sitting there saying, look, we have a Super Bowl. We should have won another one. Let's not go down that road. But the point is, if you give me what I want,
I'll give you what you need.
I think you hit the nail on the head. Because early on in Russell Wilson's career, even after they won the Super Bowl, Russ didn't get the credit.
No.
Like, let's not get it twisted. Remember, it was the vaunted Legion of Boom, right. Marshawn Lynch. Yep. They were a defensive team that could run the ball. And Russ was kind of, I'd say, Dak Prescott plus. Ooh. Right? Like, that's how people viewed him. Okay. Like, king size, and Dak Prescott was like
young Tom Brady.
Size.
Young Tom Brady?
Can stay young Tom Brady because Tom Brady had that crazy defense. Yeah. It's just so, Tom Brady's been great for so long, it's hard for me to even go back to 03, 04, 05, 06, 07.
I'm with you.
But when you think about Russ, he now realizes, like you said, 9 years into his career, Russ and I came out together, same career, same draft class.
You still playing?
I've been out, and Russ is just now peaking. And so I'm like, he realizes the weight of his legacy, it falls on his shoulders. Mm. It doesn't fall on Pete Carroll's shoulders. It doesn't fall on Snyder's shoulders. It falls on his shoulders. So if he wants to enter into that conversation with the Mahomeses of the world, with the Aaron Rodgerses of the world, and what I mean by that is everybody looks at Aaron Rodgers as a prolific quarterback. You don't really think of Russ and Rodgers in the same breath for whatever reason, but Russ is going to need a few more pieces. Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, not enough. Yeah. He realizes, you know what? I might need a freakazoid like Antonio Brown, and that's why he's going out on a limb like he is.
He's going on a limb, but I don't think it's going to work for him. He has to understand what he's fighting against. Mm-hmm. What he's fighting against is Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll is standing for is culture. And I don't think a lot of football players understand how we get duped into football culture. Football culture is not just to get wins and losses in terms of what talent we have here. It's supposed to be a statement towards everything we do is done with you and done without you. Mm-hmm. You're replaceable because of football culture. I'll give you the backstory. Pete Carroll, as he was a young coach struggling, had to figure out how can I manifest all of what I know about the game on the field. Then he runs into Dick LeBeau, and Dick LeBeau breaks it down to him. You know, Dick LeBeau knows everything football. And he tells him two things. You need a philosophy and you need a culture. And then all of a sudden, Pete Carroll says it in his book. Everything crystallizes for him. Create a culture. And his culture is we're going to compete and we're going to run that damn football. Mm-hmm. I don't care who is there. Remember, this was a Matt Flynn offense before Russ. So here's the thing, but football players don't understand. Because we're replaceable in a culture, they're just trying to just go out there and do it their way. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to get caught up in the last name. So even the Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, he's like, yeah, we're going to move on from you. And Russell Wilson is trying to change the culture. He's trying to change his philosophy. Pete Carroll saying, the only thing I can bank on is that. Because when you're gone, Russell Wilson,
I still need my coaching.
Players need to understand that. Stop trying to fight the culture. Just won't happen. Coming up, we're going to get to Patrick Mahomes and his new deal, but first, the expectations are building for Joe Burrow's rookie season. We'll tell you if the number one pick lives up to them next. Speak for yourself, presented by Hyundai.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Let's move to Cincinnati, where Joe Burrow is facing some mighty high expectations. See, the top pick has been earning praise from the Bengals for how quickly he's picked up the offense. But offensive coordinator Brian Callahan does admit that getting Joe Burrow fully ready under these strange circumstances of the offseason is going to be quite a challenge. We're joined now by the one and only NFL analyst, LeVar Arrington. But Marcellus, I'm going to start with you. Are you optimistic about Burrow's rookie season?
Hell no. Come on, man. He's a rookie in the NFL, and we're going to be optimistic about his chances when he's going to the sorriest team in the NFL.
Say it with your chest.
A team that was 26th ranked in offense, 29th ranked in defense, which counts. And I don't know if Joe Burrow could play linebacker, but they still probably are going to be around 29th ranked. We'll see. And 30th in scoring. Yuck. All of that sounds bad. So as my coaches used to talk to us, raw, unfiltered, it's time to pull up the scruggle bus, as they would call it. Scruggle with a K, not a T. Scruggle bus, week one. Oh, you got to play those Chargers. Good luck with that and that potent defense that they have. So he's going to have to deal with that. Week two, who does he play? Cleveland Browns, the Battle of Ohio. Oh, hell no. That's not going to go well as well. It's going to be a roller coaster ride. Why? Who is Joe Burrow? Joe Burrow went to Ohio State. We all know Joe Burrow has some injury issues, lost his job to Dwayne Haskins, transferred instead of fighting and beating out Dwayne Haskins. One day he said, I'm a dip, goes to LSU. Then we see him at LSU looking average, a little above average. He did pick it up at the end of that season, last four games. And then he has a perfect year. The problem now is that everyone is writing and thinking of Joe Burrow from the perspective of the perfect year. What is the law of averages when it comes to Joe Burrow? Is he as low as a guy who couldn't beat out Dwayne Haskins and had to run away? Is he as average as a guy who was having a sixth, seventh round projected season in terms of NFL prospects? Or is he a guy who was perfect in Joe Bayou last year?
Talk about
the law of averages is where we have to get to, men. And I say it's going to be a lot less, a lot lower than optimism.
Well, I know what side young Macho Acho is going to fall on, as he was co-signing you so eloquently from the side as you were dropping your points.
Right.
I think it was a great argument, a discussion point that you made, Marcellus. I'm proud of you. I commend you on that. But the problem is you're the same person that was making the argument that Dak Prescott should be paid like he's the number one guy because he's next up. And I recall always giving the rebuttal and refuting that. How do you get that when you're an 8-18? So when I look at the fact that we're talking about paying a guy in the high 30s and 40s and Dak Prescott, I look at this Joe Burrow situation and I'm not measuring him off of wins and losses. Sure, his team is some dog diddly doo doo doo, but in the end, right, you got to think about this. I'm measuring and weighing Joe Burrow off of what he brings to the table, his skill set, his talent level. And historically speaking, it says that Joe Burrow will be able to come in and do things like Ben Roethlisberger, who came in and started and won 13 games as a starter with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Sure, you'll argue that he was on a much better team. Don't compare him. But I'm comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges. Ben Roethlisberger is a fine quarterback that was considered to be a franchise caliber guy, and so is Joe Burrow. I look at another guy. If you want to say Ben Roethlisberger because he's a Hall of Famer, let's go to another guy that isn't, that came in and had success as well. Y'all remember Kyle Bowler? Out of you know, Cal Berkeley, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. You know,
yeah.
You might not even remember him. You might be too young for that one, Acho. But I know you.
Me either.
I know who you know. I know you know him, that dude.
I do.
And Cal Bowler came in as a high-profile guy. And you know what Cal Bowler did when he became the starter of that team? Yeah, he went 5-3 as a starter. And if he did not get injured, he probably would have had an even better year because those guys were on their way to a great year.
So
I got a few other names that I could throw out at you guys. But historically speaking, I mean, you know what? Look at Baker Mayfield. Let's just go with Baker Mayfield. That was a team that you could compare to Cincinnati Bengals. Baker Mayfield came there. Baker got them to a 7-8-1 record, which was the best record they had since 2014, y'all. And the loss total matched that of 2007. So I'm optimistic that Joe Burrow can come in and have a franchise quarterback rookie impact.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Of the jury.
I had so many fabulous notes about this point that lovely producer Tasha, that she had created and we had eloquently discussed and gone through. But LeVar said something so ridiculous that I'm going off script.
Ooh.
I'm going to completely diminish these notes and dismantle his argument.
Get him.
While LeVar was talking, he made a fatal mistake, Marcellus. I'm sure you heard it.
Yeah,
he said, I'm not going to measure Joe Burrow by wins and losses.
Ignorant.
Nope.
That's the only thing you do in the NFL with the quarterback. You measure him by wins and losses. It's like asking your homeboy, hey, bro, can you hoop? And he says, I can play defense. It's like asking your homeboy, like, hey, is she cute?
No, let him go.
Oh, well, she has a good heart. You measure a quarterback by wins and losses. So for you to preface your whole argument, LeVar, with, well, you know, I'm not even going to measure him by wins and losses. The one metric that you have to measure a quarterback by in the NFL, I just had to kind of disregard everything you said after that. But if I can get back on point, because I did spend a lot of time last night preparing for this
topic. Because I'm going to spank that.
If I may get back on point, sir. Think about Joe Burrow, what he had at LSU. He had a first-round running back in Clyde Edwards-Helaire, beast.
Ooh.
He had a first-round receiver in Justin Jefferson, beast. He had the best receiver in college football that didn't even come out for the draft because he was only a sophomore, and Biletnikoff Award winner, Ja'Marr Chase. He had a tight end who was the son of a Hall of Famer in Thaddeus Moss. So Joe Burrow, literally, he looked left, he had a weapon. He looked right, he had a weapon. He looked up, he had a weapon. He looked down, he had a weapon. Mm. He does not have those same weapons in Cincinnati. Cincinnati had 1,000-yard rusher. Outside of Joe Mixon, they had the next highest rusher, ran for 170 yards. So while Joe Burrow is an incredibly talented receiver, incredibly talented quarterback, he ain't got no weapons, coach. He ain't got no weapons.
LeVar.
Please.
Hello.
You know, they had such a great season at LSU the year before Joe Burrow came in. They hoisted that national championship trophy because they had all of those weapons littered around LSU's locker room and did so many amazing things. No, they didn't. That's right. They didn't win a national championship the year before Joe Burrow got there. As a matter of fact, Joe Burrow took those guys and made that little running back in the backfield look like he was a world beater. Made those receivers that were doing such amazing things look like world beater. A lot of times when you have a talented guy at that position, he makes those weapons look like amazing weapons, right? So here's the thing about what you're saying right now, Macho Acho. I find it interesting that you would say that you have to judge it by wins and losses, because I tend to look at guys who have played in the league and have had a ton of success. One being considered the greatest player of all time in the name of one Barry Sanders. You know what? How many times did Barry Sanders go to the playoffs? How many games did Barry Sanders get wins for?
Don't do this, LeVar.
You just said that success is what measured by wins and losses. Wow, you know what? Hey, Marcellus, you played in Buffalo. There was a guy by the name of, let's go down the line, let's say Jim Kelly, let's say Bruce Smith, let's say Cornelius Bennett, let's say Daryl Talley. Let's throw out a whole bunch of names. And you know what? They were really, really fine football players, Hall of Fame football players. How many Super Bowls they got? How many rings they got?
LeVar, I have a question for you, sir.
Ask me a question.
Who
please.
On the football field touches the ball every single play?
Uh-oh.
There's only one person that touches the ball every single play, LeVar.
So there we go. So here we go. A center does, too. A center touches it, so I'm gonna prove that one wrong. But here we go, right? But here we go. I threw out Jim Kelly. Let me throw out another name at you. You ever hear the name Dan Marino? That might be before your time. Everybody but you know what? Let's throw out Dan Marino.
Okay, we can throw out some great names. You're not being analogous now. One, you're switching positions. You're going to give me running backs and linebackers and defensive ends.
Y'all measuring it by wins and losses.
All we're asking is, are you optimistic? We didn't say he's going to win a Super Bowl or bust.
We're talking about
having an impact, changing the course for the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm not a believer just yet.
I
don't even know who Joe Burrow is. I've gotten three different Joe Burrows in three years. So all I'm saying is, let's wait to see who he is first, instead of listening to Brian Callahan, his offensive coordinator, saying he looks amazing right now and being a leader and effective in our virtual Zooms. Let me tell you something about playing football on the keyboard. It's kind of easy. Like, you know, all I got to do is sit center in front of the camera lens and, you know, look into the screen. That's not football. That's certainly not NFL football. So the hype is coming from the heavens. All I'm saying is, let's temper some of that down until we see what he can do consistently and at the NFL level.
In conclusion, am I optimistic? I'm not, because it's easier to be pulled down than it is to pull an entire organization up. Woo. And I think that this Bengals franchise is going to pull
product of his back. Environment, damn it.
Coming up, we've got some huge NFL news. Patrick Mahomes is signing a 10-year deal with the Chiefs. We'll tell you what to make of it next. Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai.
Take that money.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Let's move to Cincinnati, where Joe Burrow is facing some mighty high expectations. See, the top pick has been earning praise from the Bengals for how quickly he's picked up the offense. But offensive coordinator Brian Callahan does admit that getting Joe Burrow fully ready under these strange circumstances of the offseason is going to be quite a challenge. We're joined now by the one and only NFL analyst LeVar Arrington. But Marcellus, I'm going to start with you. Are you optimistic about Burrow's rookie season?
Hell no. Come on, man. He's a rookie in the NFL, and we're going to be optimistic about his chances when he's going to the sorriest team in the NFL.
Say it with your chest.
A team that was 26th ranked in offense, 29th ranked in defense, which counts. And I don't know if Joe Burrow could play linebacker, but they still probably are going to be around 29th ranked. We'll see.
and 30th in scoring. Yuck. All of that sounds bad. So as my coaches used to talk to us raw, unfiltered, it's time to pull up the Scruggle Bus, as they would call it. Scruggle with a K, not a T. Scruggle Bus, week one. Oh, you got to play those Chargers. Good luck with that and that potent defense that they have. So he's going to have to deal with that. Week two, who does he play? Cleveland Browns, the Battle of Ohio. Oh, hell no. That's not going to go well as well. It's going to be a roller coaster ride. Why? Who is Joe Burrow? Joe Burrow went to Ohio State. We all know Joe Burrow has some injury issues, lost his job to Dwayne Haskins, transferred instead of fighting and beating out Dwayne Haskins. One day he said, I'm a dip, goes to LSU. Then we see him at LSU looking average, a little above average. He did pick it up at the end of that season, last four games. And then he has a perfect year. The problem now is that everyone is writing and thinking of Joe Burrow from the perspective of the perfect year. What is the law of averages when it comes to Joe Burrow? Is he as low as a guy who couldn't beat out Dwayne Haskins and had to run away? Is he as average as a guy who was having a sixth, seventh round projected season in terms of NFL prospects? Or is he a guy who was perfect in Joe Bayou last year?
Talk about
the law of averages is where we have to get to, men. And I say it's going to be a lot less, a lot lower than optimism.
Well, I know what side young Macho Acho is going to fall on, as he was co-signing you so eloquently from the side as you were dropping your points.
Right.
I think it was a great argument, a discussion point that you made, Marcellus. I'm proud of you. I commend you on that. But the problem is you're the same person that was making the argument that Dak Prescott should be paid like he's the number one guy because he's next up. And I recall always giving the rebuttal and refuting that. How do you get that when you're an 8-18? So when I look at the fact that we're talking about paying a guy in the high 30s and 40s and Dak Prescott, I look at this Joe Burrow situation and I'm not measuring him off of wins and losses. Sure, his team is some dog diddly doo doo doo, but in the end, right, you got to think about this. I'm measuring and weighing Joe Burrow off of what he brings to the table, his skill set, his talent level. And historically speaking, it says that Joe Burrow will be able to come in and do things like Ben Roethlisberger, who came in and started and won 13 games as a starter with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Sure, you'll argue that he was on a much better team. Don't compare him. But I'm comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges. Ben Roethlisberger is a fine quarterback that was considered to be a franchise caliber guy, and so is Joe Burrow. I look at another guy. If you want to say Ben Roethlisberger because he's a Hall of Famer, let's go to another guy that isn't, that came in and had success as well. Y'all remember Kyle Bowler out of you know, Cal Berkeley, you know?
Yeah,
okay. You know,
yeah.
You might not even remember him. You might be too young for that one, Acho. But I know you.
Me either.
I know who you know. I know you know him, that dude.
I do.
And Kyle Bowler came in as a high-profile guy. And you know what Kyle Bowler did when he became the starter of that team? Yeah, he went 5-3 as a starter. And if he did not get injured, he probably would have had an even better year those guys were on their way to a great year.
I got
a few other names that I could throw out at you guys. But historically speaking, I mean, you know what? Look at Baker Mayfield. Let's just go with Baker Mayfield.
Man, this dude.
That was a team that you could compare to the Cincinnati Bengals.
True.
Baker Mayfield came there. Baker got them to a 7-8-1 record, which was the best record they had since 2014, y'all. And the loss total matched that of 2007. So I'm optimistic that Joe Burrow can come in and have a franchise quarterback rookie impact.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Of the jury.
I had so many fabulous notes about this point that lovely producer Tasha, that she had created and we had eloquently discussed and gone through. But LeVar said something so ridiculous that I'm going off script.
Ooh.
I'm going to completely diminish these notes and dismantle his argument.
Get him.
While LeVar was talking, he made a fatal mistake, Marcellus. I'm sure you heard
Uh-oh.
It.
Yeah,
he said, I'm not going to measure Joe Burrow by wins and losses.
Ignorant.
Nope.
That's the only thing you do in the NFL with the quarterback. You measure him by wins and losses. It's like asking your homeboy, hey, bro, can you hoop? And he says, I can play defense. It's like asking your homeboy, like, hey, is she cute?
No, let him go.
Oh, well,
let him go.
She has a good heart.
Let you measure
a quarterback by wins and losses. So for you to preface your whole argument, LeVar, with, well, you know, I'm not even going to measure him by wins and losses. The one metric that you have to measure a quarterback by in the NFL, I just had to kind of disregard everything you said after that. But if I can get back on point, because I did spend a lot of time last night preparing for this topic.
Because I'm going to spank that. If I may get back on point, sir.
Think about Joe Burrow, what he had at LSU. He had a first-round running back in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Beast. He had a first-round receiver in Justin Jefferson. Beast. He had the best receiver in college football that didn't even come out for the draft because he was only a sophomore, and Blintikoff Award winner, Ja'Marr Chase. He had a tight end who was the son of a Hall of Famer in Thaddeus Moss. So Joe Burrow, literally, he looked left, he had a weapon. He looked right, he had a weapon. He looked up, he had a weapon. He looked down, he had a weapon. He does not have those same weapons in Cincinnati. Cincinnati had 1,000-yard rusher. Outside of Joe Mixon, they had the next highest rusher, ran for 170 yards. So while Joe Burrow is an incredibly talented receiver, incredibly talented quarterback, he ain't got no weapons, coach. He ain't got no weapons.
LeVar.
Please.
Hello.
You know, they had such a great season at LSU the year before Joe Burrow came in. They hoisted that national championship trophy because they had all of those weapons littered around LSU's locker room and did so many amazing things. No, no, they didn't. That's right. They didn't win a national championship the year before Joe Burrow got there. As a matter of fact, Joe Burrow took those guys and made that little running back in the backfield look like he was a world beater. Made those receivers that were doing such amazing things look like world beater. A lot of times when you have a talented guy at that position, he makes those weapons look like amazing weapons, right? So here's the thing about what you're saying right now, Acho. I find it interesting that you would say that you have to judge it by wins and losses, because I tend to look at guys who have played in the league and have had a ton of success. One being considered the greatest player of all time in the name of one Barry Sanders. You know what? How many times did Barry Sanders go to the playoffs? How many games did Barry Sanders get wins for?
Don't do this, LeVar.
You just said that success is what measured by wins and losses. Wow, you know what? Hey, Marcellus, you played in Buffalo. There was a guy by the name of, let's go down the line. Let's say Jim Kelly. Let's say Bruce Smith. Let's say Cornelius Bennett. Let's say Daryl Talley. Let's throw out a whole bunch of names. And you know what? They were really, really fine football players, Hall of Fame football players. How many Super Bowls they got? How many rings they got?
LeVar, I have a question for you, sir. Ask me a question.
Ask me a question.
Who on the football field touches the ball every single play?
There's only one person that touches the ball every single play, LeVar.
So there we go. So here we go. A center does, too. A center touches it. So I have to prove that one wrong. But here we go. I threw out Jim Kelly. Let me throw out another name at you. You ever hear the name Dan Marino? That might be before your time. Let's throw out Dan Marino.
Okay, please, we can throw out some great names. You're not being analogous now. One, you're switching positions. You're going to give me running backs and linebackers and defensive ends.
Y'all measuring it by wins and losses.
All we're asking is, are you optimistic? We didn't say he's going to win a Super Bowl or bust.
We're talking about
having an impact, changing the course for the Cincinnati Bengals. I'm not a believer just yet.
I don't even know who changed the goalposts.
Well, I don't even know who moved the goalposts.
Be real, LeVar.
I don't even know who Joe Burrow is. I've gotten three different Joe Burrows in three years. So all I'm saying is, let's wait to see who he is first, instead of listening to Brian Callahan, his offensive coordinator, saying he looks amazing right now and being a leader and effective in our virtual Zooms. Let me tell you something about playing football on the keyboard. It's kind of easy. Like, you know, all I got to do is sit center in front of the camera lens and, you know, look into the screen. That's not football. That's certainly not NFL football. So the hype is coming from the heavens. All I'm saying is, let's temper some of that down until we see what he can do consistently and at the NFL level.
In conclusion, am I optimistic? I'm not, because it's easier to be pulled down than it is to pull an entire organization up. And I think that this Bengals franchise is going to pull
down. Product of his environment, damn it.
Coming up, we've got some huge NFL news. Patrick Mahomes is signing a 10-year, yes, a 10-year deal with the Chiefs. We'll tell you what to make of it next. Speak for yourself. Presented by Hyundai.
Take that money.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Let's move to some huge breaking news in the NFL today, where Adam Schefter is reporting that Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs have agreed to a 10-year contract extension that would keep him in Kansas City through 2031. Schefter also reporting, no surprise here, it is the richest deal in NFL history. Woo, LeVar Arrington, he's back with us. Acho, I'm going to start with you, big dog. What's your reaction to this massive deal?
I can't even understand how much money Patrick Mahomes is about to get. But then I was like, is he worth it? That's what I was looking at my nose for. Of course he is worth it.
Okay.
Think about Patrick Mahomes. Good. The man won a Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes won a Super Bowl before he lost a game by more than 7 points in his NFL career. Think about Patrick Mahomes. In his first 2 and 3 seasons, the dude has a Super Bowl MVP. The dude has a NFL MVP. Patrick Mahomes has already proven on the field that you can depend on him to the highest level. But now, when you're gonna give somebody a $10 million deal, Marcellus, you got to understand, well, what am I doing as far as off the field? What am I having to deal with? Patrick Mahomes hasn't shown any character flaws, not one, in his first 3 seasons, even dating back to his time at Texas Tech in Lubbock when he had to put the team on his back and overcome all odds. So when I think about a $10 million deal, it's a super safe and smart investment by the Chiefs. Avoid all the drama that you're seeing from other organizations, cough, Dallas Cowboys. Avoid any sort of confusion. Let Mahomes know you're committed to him. And now Mahomes committed to the Chiefs. The Chiefs, they the big winners out of this one.
Man.
My reaction is I want to know what the numbers are. The death lives in the details, right? So the detail of what this contract represents in reality versus perception. I love when the NFL and teams put out there, the ball clubs put out there, the richest deal ever in the history of the league. Yeah, that's if you were to see that money. All right. This is the difference between Bobby Bonilla and Patrick Mahomes potentially. All right. Bobby Bo's still getting paid. He ain't played since I was playing. All right. He's still getting paid by the Mets. You know why? Because it was fully guaranteed. Now, if the report came out and said they have agreed to a deal, we don't have the numbers yet, but we do know it is fully guaranteed, no questions asked. I'm okay with it. I did a little math here. We know that Dak Prescott has been pushing to get the upper 30s, early 40s to get a contract that would possibly rival what Patrick Mahomes is going to get. Now, as Patrick Mahomes, if I'm him, I'm looking to myself and I'm saying, okay, if I'm going to do a 10-year extension where I could possibly do 2, possibly 3 deals within 10-year period of time, I want to be compensated fairly, and I want to be compensated in a way where I don't feel a certain type of way in year 7, 8, 9, or 10. So I did the math. If on average I got a $40 million a year guaranteed contract for 10 years, you know what that number is. That's $400 million. If I don't hear $400 million come out in the reports that it is a fully guaranteed 10 years. I don't care if he trips and can't play anymore in year 3 of that contract. If it ain't fully guaranteed for 10 years, I'm not impressed by them reaching the richest, longest extension in NFL history, because, quite frankly, there's so many ways that the system within the NFL is set up for people to get from under contracts that look to be the contract for that player. And it's really not.
Yeah, I'm in this tug of war. I'm getting a little closer to you, LeVar, than I want to. When you hear the richest deal in NFL history, you got to celebrate. How much shall we celebrate? Celebrate? We don't know the numbers. So it's interesting when I hear this, I'm so excited and I'm still reserved. I still have reservation because what are those numbers? A lot of people are speculating. $450 million is the over-under. I'm saying over. I'm not signing what LeVar just said, a $400 million deal. I'm not signing that, and I'm going to tell you why. Mm-hmm. Right now, we know that the NFL has one-way contracts, basically. You know, oh, we don't like you anymore, rip. But
gone.
When you have the leverage, when you have the hammer, you have to swing it.
And Dak Prescott is in the situation of impasse because he wants fewer years, not more years. You know why? Because they're tearing up the TV contract in a couple years. And guess what? If you have a deal to 2031, not only are they going to go tear up the television deal once, not even twice, probably a third time. Look how much money can be left on the table if he's not signing something north of $500 million. For me, I have to see something north of half a billy because this is a guy who has no scandal. You're right. The only worst thing about him is he puts ketchup on his steak. Like, that's the worst thing about him. This is a guy.
Or his tacos.
But look, he has been injured. Chill. He has been injured before, which has to come into the conversation equation somewhat. He's still durable. We all get it. But the point of this is Dak Prescott potentially could sign a deal right now if he gets what he wants, 4 years, 160. Then he could look back, get another one, 4 years, 160. So now we're at 8,320. And then we're talking about there's another deal if he's still playing that level, and you got to get even more than that. Why would Patrick Mahomes put himself in a long-term conversation to be comparable to Dak Prescott? I would sign short deals, and I would leapfrog everyone through the process instead of one long deal and hoping that that's the number.
Y'all getting so greedy, gentlemen. Y'all yeah. getting so greedy with another man's money, mind you.
Okay.
Come on now. Look at this for a second. If Dak Prescott does sign this, if Patrick Mahomes does sign this 10-year deal,
not Dak.
Dak ain't signing nobody 10-year deal. Let's keep that 100. Hey, Dak better sign a 1-year deal, okay?
Right.
If Mahomes does sign this 10-year deal, then he's gonna get at least 250, 300 guaranteed. Remember, Mahomes got injured, what was it, on a QB sneak type move last year? So you can't consider everything or your dollars tomorrow, your dollars the next day to be guaranteed. But when I think about Patrick Mahomes, understand, even in 2031, the dude's only going to be 34, turning 35 years old. Mm. So it's not like he still don't have more money to be collected True. When you see Drew Brees playing to 40, Tom Brady playing well into 43. So Mahomes, even if he does sign a 10-year, the guarantees are going to rise. What they say, a rising tide floats all boats. Yeah. Well, a rising contract is going to float your pockets. So it doesn't need to be fully guaranteed. I'm not looking for that for Patrick Mahomes. Mm. He don't need to look for that either. He just needs to look for 250, 300 million guaranteed, and he's good. Y'all asking for half a billy?
No,
so y'all getting a little too greedy.
No, I disagree. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. And the reason why is the logic behind it kind of goes to what you were saying, Acho. I was agreeing with you until that last statement, and then kind of sort of a little bit with what you were saying, Marcellus, in terms of when you're talking about the longevity of 10 years, that is a really, really long time, as y'all both mentioned. And you also mentioned very importantly, Acho, is that what about injuries, those injury concerns? What you said is guaranteed today isn't guaranteed tomorrow. I love that, right? And that's why he has earned the fact to say, if you're going to lock me in for 10 years, see what that says to me from a business with my business hat on, what that says to me is this company is coming to him and saying, we want to get you at a number that will actually help us mitigate getting, you know, having the risk of having to pay closer to $600 million a little bit further down the road.
That's real.
So if we're going to compromise so that we don't have to come back to the table and go to a number that we're really not comfortable going to, and you're willing to agree to it, then first, you better guarantee it, for one. You better guarantee the entire shebang. Don't sit here and tell me it is conditional and we'll revisit it in year five. No. If I'm going to sign, as Patrick Mahomes right now, if I am going to sign that contract that takes me 10 years out from where I am today, I'm okay if the numbers inflate and the tide rises, all of the other ships that are out there, I will have been making that $40 million every single year up until that tide rises. So I'm okay with that. If it's guaranteed and we restructure and y'all want to give me more because I'm out playing my contract, great. But I want to feel as though because I've earned the right being the best quarterback, if not number two in the league, if not number two best player in the league right now, that I am being compensated for it if I'm going to sign a decade-long deal. And that has to be a guarantee, and it has to be a locked number, no less than what it's supposed to be when you're going where you're going. That's fair is fair.
Yeah, you really got to put a stopgap on the value as it can fluctuate. And we're all thinking about how it can go up, but also there needs to be a floor as it goes up. Think about it. Like one day, if he signs for $40 million per, so that's 10 years, 400. Do you know how fast we're going to be with average quarterbacks making around $40 million? And then he's locked in for, what, 5 more years at that number. So, like LeVar is saying, just what they do with the franchise number, it has to be top five average. Well, if I'm Patrick Mahomes and I'm giving you this much runway, it has to be top two number. It always has to be there at the minimum. But franchises don't give you long-term deals unless they know they're going to win in the process. And these projections, you have to understand, why you get a long-term deal in the first place is to make it cap-friendly so you can spread it over in terms of the salary cap going forward. So they basically walk up to you and say, I'm going to give you so much money now that you're going to forget that I'm giving you a discount on what you're really valued. And you don't understand it because you're like, look at all this, Acho. Oh, my God, what am I going to do with $400 million? They're like, you could have had 600, but you know what? Take it all right now. It's like the lottery. When they offer you, do you want it in monthly sums?
Lump sum.
Or do you want it monthly, yearly?
Or do you want to pay 60% and get the 40%?
And that's the conversation. Now, to pivot a little bit, it has a ripple effect in NFL. We were talking about Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott. They now know that there's a ceiling out there, and the ceiling is heaven. Because, golly, you know how much money that is going to come from this deal. Restructuring in this situation, a lot of times quarterbacks are the first to restructure. They get a lot more cash up front, and then they push the deal even farther back. But I don't like this whole conversation that I'm hearing from Acho especially that, hey, you know what? When you're 34 or 35, you can come back to us again at the negotiating table. I would quickly retort, how much money did I leave on the table from this age up into 34? That's what's not being respected fully, and that's what I think the franchise is trying to discount.
But what if you get hurt? But what if you get hurt in year two or year three? What if you get hurt and you cannot play another down of football in year two or year three? Y'all are basing a lot of what y'all are saying off of the longevity of him being able to be there, and we look at quarterbacks' as longevity. I get that. But what if he gets hurt in year two? That's why I say fully guaranteed. If you get fully guaranteed, I can handle $40 million in year 10. You know why? Because if I got hurt in year two, I'm still getting $40 million in year 10. I'm still getting $40 million in year 9. That's all I'm saying. Protect yourself because your chickens is quacking. That, or not, that's a duck. Protect your ducks because your ducks are quacking right now. All right, protect your ducks.
That money got you going a little crazy over there. I ain't mad at you. But speaking of fully guaranteed money, the NBA and their relaunch is almost here. And Anthony Davis says the Lakers actually have one huge advantage. We'll tell you if we agree next.
Speak for yourself, presented by Monday.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's move now to the NBA, where the relaunch is just around the corner. And there have been a lot of questions about how the layoff will affect the rest of the season. But Anthony Davis says the Lakers' chances of winning a title are actually higher because the rest has let them heal up and decompress. LeBron is trying to get some intimidation going, posting on Instagram, quote, war ready, hashtag revenge season coming soon. We're joined now by the one and only Slick Rick NBA analyst. But Marcellus,
yes.
I'm going to start with you. Do you agree with Anthony Davis here?
Unfortunately, I do. Oh, man, this is the wrong thing to happen to the NBA. Look, the Lakers were rolling before the pandemic hit. And I remember being in that moment, sitting on the couch with my wife. We were about to watch some NBA basketball. And then all of a sudden, they canceled the game. Rudy Gobert tested positive, and we're sitting there. And my wife, anesthesiologist, background nurse, she's immediately thinking about non-perishables and let's get cleaning supplies. She immediately hits Amazon, starts to say, we got to go to the store and do all that stuff. I'm sitting there like, damn it. We were about to get those Lakers fatigued, tired, and worn out because they're the third oldest team in the league, second oldest by experience, and we just needed the law of attrition to continue to just wear on them. And then with the pause, selfishly, I said, it's not going to hurt my Clippers, but it's certainly going to help these Lakers to be able to collect their breath and to refresh their bodies and minds and go back out there. So To me, Anthony Davis hit the nail on the head. Yeah, this is going to help them. Everyone's feeling better. They're going to roll.
Marcellus, I think you're approaching this as a cautious Clippers fan rather than a clear-eyed NBA fan.
Okay.
Yes, the Lakers are old. They have five guys who are 32 years or older. Mm. Dwight Howard would make six, and the latest I've heard is that they are expecting him to be there. That's half of your roster at 30-plus years old. And I know you and I have had this conversation before in terms of when you get into your 30s, it takes you a lot longer to start that engine. It's like your old car. You can't just run out and dial it up.
Yeah.
You got to give it a little time to warm up. That's what half of this Lakers roster is facing. But here's the problem that I have. I don't want to say in these turbulent, divisive times, I want to be a nicer person. So I'm not going to say that Anthony Davis is a dope. I'm going to say he sounds like one. Ooh. And the media that co-signed this and didn't ask any critical questions afterward are right there with him. Mm. He obviously didn't go to University of Texas or Columbia and study critical thinking. Because if he's healthier, okay? If he's healthier.
Oh, don't do this.
By the way, nobody else. If he's healthier, Kawhi Leonard is healthier. Paul George is healthier. Luka Doncic is healthier. Eric Gordon is healthier. Zion Williamson is healthier. There's a whole crew of guys that they have to go through. And oh, by the way, to my knowledge, none of those teams lost their starting point guard in Avery Bradley. So please help me in understanding why, how you would look at the Lakers at this point and say, you know what, they're in better shape than they were last time we saw them. They might be, but so is everybody else, and they're not in better shape.
I think about this, Slick Rick. Mm. I moved to L.A., 2 weeks ago now, so I don't get out much. But on the weekends, I like to take trips. So I hop into my car this past weekend. I drive out to Orange County.
What kind of car you got?
It's a rental. Okay. A Hyundai, actually. I didn't realize how far it was. So I drive back to O.C., and I drive back, and I park in my garage. My car was on E. It was on empty. Just because it sat in the garage for a while, Marcellus, when I go back to the garage, it's still going to be on E unless I put gas into the tank. Therefore, just because some players rest, unless you've actually taken the necessary precautions, unless you've actually done things to rehabilitate and rehab, you will still show up to a degree depleted. But to Slick Rick's point, I think about what I've been seeing on social media. Take a look at Ja Morant, for example. He ain't been chilling this offseason or this last 3.5 months. He just posted he put on about 12 pounds of muscle because he been working. And I was like, okay, well, that's just one dude. But then you look at Zion. Zion, he looked like he's been in the gym. He looked like Bane from The Dark Knight Rises with his mask on. He ready now.
Ready.
So just because AD been chilling and getting right, rather, and just because LeBron been getting right, I'm thinking everybody else has been getting right, too.
Mm.
By the way, Jaren Jackson Jr., Ja Morant wasn't playing with his running buddy last time we saw them. He's now had a chance to recover from that knee injury. Grizzlies are probably the Lakers' first-round matchup, so they're going to get the Grizzlies at their best, or certainly better than we last saw them. The other thing is with Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis has not had a problem getting healthy. He's had a problem staying healthy. So the fact that he's feeling good now does not mean that that body is not going to break down again once we get back to playing. All of which, I'm just, if only he'd gone to Texas and not
Kentucky. Hey, man. Slick Rick, I had something to retort. I had a comeback. Here you go. That comeback is gone. All right. Y'all not going to put me in a position where I got to defend the damn Lakers, but I got to defend the Lakers. They were on a collision course. Like you said, how much gas before I get to the destination? Mm-hmm. Everyone's done it trying to go to Vegas or, I chose case, Orange County. Do I have enough in the tank? And they were mentally having anxiety about having enough in the tank. At least that worry is off of their plate. Now, they could go out there and play. Everyone has gotten better, so it's a universal application, not a problem. But at least the Lakers are saying, we're not going to get in our own way going forward because we won't be fatigued.
I get it. The Lakers tank is on full, but everybody else's is too.
You ain't lying there.
Coming up, Cam Newton. He just sent a special message to his critics, but I'm sure Uncle Jimmy going to have something to say for Cam. That's next. Speak for yourself.
Welcome back. Let's talk Cam Newton, who has found a new team, but is still using some old motivation tactics, posting a message on Instagram saying, quote, "You would rather have that than this and that. He's a monster, and he's tired of being humble, like you, Acho." Well, we're joined now by Uncle Jimmy. Uncle Jimmy, you like Cam clapping back at his critics?
Look, man, Cam ain't doing nothing but bumping his gums, rattling his jaw.
Okay.
Selling wolf tickets, if you will.
E-40.
Okay.
Yes.
See, Cam Newton is about to let his mouth write a check that his foot can't cash.
Don't do that, Uncle.
When was the last time Cam Newton won a meaningful game? The last time Cam Newton won a meaningful game, the fans of Kansas City was trying to run Andy Reid out of town for trading away Alex Smith. The last time Cam Newton won a meaningful game, Marcellus Wiley was on co-host number 9. Okay? That's right before Max Kellerman dumped your ass. Remember? Come on, man.
Talk about it, huh? Talk to y'all tomorrow.